True Seekers, Mike Malloy here on the Nova M Radio Network. Thank you for tuning in this evening. It was 63 years ago today. By this time, 63 years ago today, the assault had pretty much, at least the beach landing, the greatest in terms of size and number of people involved, naval amphibious assault, I should say, amphibious assault in the history of warfare occurred on the beaches of Normandy. Yeah, this is D-Day, June 6, 1944. The best depiction of what happened that day, obviously, is in the movie Saving Private Ryan. The first, what is it, the first 19 minutes is almost incomprehensible in its reality, so I've been told by old men who are World War II vets. But it's staggering. If you get a chance to go back and look at those first 20 minutes of Saving Private Ryan, June 6, D-Day, 1944. Here we are, 63 years later, and there are demonstrations in some key cities in Eastern Europe. Riots, police out with water cannons. Transportation being disrupted must mean George Bush is on the prowl, which he is. Demonstrations all over the place. Some of the signs that are being held up now, I don't know how they could be more explicit. Number one world terrorist. Every place this freak goes. Have you noticed this? Is he not the first president? I think Nixon was able to travel in Western Europe. Nixon was able to... the only place I think Nixon was berated, I don't think he ever would have gone to Southeast Asia, but in South America, because it was very clear to most South Americans what you and I didn't find out until years later, and most Americans still don't know. And that is our involvement in the overthrow, destabilization, and murder of so many heads of state in Central and South America. But there's Bush, and Europe once again is in an uproar because of this freak. I tried not to watch news today except BBC. BBC had we're back to satellite. We gave up on cable. We're back to satellite television, so we could get Link and some of the real progressive channels that you cannot get on cable. Oh, maybe some cable systems. I don't know. Not here though. So we're back on satellite, and at 5:30 Eastern Time, BBC World Report is on live from. I guess it's live from the UK. What would that be? 11:30 at night in the UK. Is it 6 hours difference? I think. And their reporting on what's going on around the G8 summit meeting is way, way different from what you get from NBC, CBS, and ABC in this country. Oh, my God, is it different. Brian Williams and the news. If you have any doubts that the Bush organization is truly a crime family, get this. New charges have been filed in the Jack Abramoff probe. You know, Abramoff, the convicted felon who is now serving time in federal prison, and one of the key insiders of the Bush crime family, a guy who had... this is the reason Dick Cheney doesn't want any of his logs, his visitors' logs, examined by anybody, because of the hundreds of visits Abramoff made. Anyway, the head of a Republican environmental advocacy group, I know, it's a front organization, it means nothing. It's the Council of Republicans for Environmental Advocacy. Anyway, the head of that group was charged today with tax evasion and obstructing a Senate inquiry as part of the Jack Abramoff corruption probe. Her name is Italia Federici. She was named in a two-count criminal information, which is a document that normally indicates a guilty plea has already been negotiated. There's going to be a hearing day after tomorrow, Friday, according to the Justice Department. It's amazing to me that the Justice Department is still functioning with another unconvicted co-conspirator felon running the Justice Department. This is insane, isn't it? But Federici, what she did was serve as a go-between for Abramoff and J. Stephen Griles. Now, who was J. Stephen Griles? Well, if you watched any television over the spring or the fall, when he was on, he was being questioned. He was a deputy interior secretary during Bush's first term, closely aligned with Gail Norton. These are all criminals. Some of them have been caught, indicted, and convicted, and are in prison. Some have been caught and indicted. Some are still floating, but they're all criminals. Anyway, Federici introduced Griles to Abramoff, and in his testimony, Griles said that gave Abramoff more credibility, the fact that he was introduced by this particular woman, this Republican environmental advocacy group head. In March, Griles became the highest-ranking Bush administration official convicted in the lobbying scandal when he pleaded guilty to a felony charge of obstructing justice. Just convicted felons every place you look. Federici, who co-founded the Council of Republicans for Environmental Advocacy, she founded it with Gail Norton, who went on to become the Secretary of the Department of Interior, Gail Norton, and Grover Norquist. A college friend of Jack Abramoff and a close ally of Bush, Grover Norquist, who is a right-wing fanatic of the highest order, you know who he is. Now, prosecutors said Ms. Federici supplemented her salary by making ATM withdrawals directly from the so-called environmental organization's bank accounts. I'm a little short on cash. Let me stop over here and withdraw $500. She didn't pay income tax from 2001, 2002, 2003, owes tens of thousands of dollars in back taxes. During that period, Abramoff was directing his clients to give this woman $500,000 to the Council of Republican for Environmental Advocacy. Now, who were Abramoff's clients? The hapless Native Americans who were trying to open gambling casinos and wanted to squash the competition. So Abramoff and what's his name? Who was that little twit that ran for lieutenant governor down here? Used to head the Ralph Reed was involved in this up to his eyeballs. This little hypocritical bastard who also is going to burn in hell like a piece of bacon fat when his turn comes, right? All these people are involved in this together. Just it's astonishing, astonishing. Now, this is the same scandal that landed former Ohio Representative Bob Ney, Republican, in the slam. It just doesn't stop. So this is, and some people still wonder why I call them a crime family. This is incredible. This would make the Tony Soprano blush, or else grit his teeth with envy. These people are astonishing. And I'm not going to talk about it tonight, but wait till we get into this guy who runs Al Hura, the Arabic language satellite television network that you and I are paying for to the tune of $49 million. And the guy who's been running that, who is a close personal friend of Karl Rove's and knows about as Ken Tomlinson knows about as much about running a television network as I know about needlepoint. He was busted for looting the public broadcasting system. Oh, it never stops, never stops. But going from petty crime to serious crime, according to the National Guard's senior uniformed officer, Lieutenant General H. Stephen Blum, who was appointed by George W. Bush, he is saying that the equipment levels for the National Guard, what's left of it in the United States, is the worst it's ever been. You know what that means, right? We'll talk about it for a second when we come back. I'm Mike Malloy. Stay with us.
It's Mike Malloy, only on Nova M Radio.
21 past the hour. So there's a meeting in Anchorage, Alaska. It's a meeting of National Guard organizations, I guess. It's 54 National Guard commanders from every state and territory are attending the annual Adjutant General's Association meeting in Anchorage, okay? Afterwards, after this meeting, there was a press conference, and the head of the National Guard, Lieutenant General H. Stephen Blum, said that National Guard units in the United States have 53% of the equipment they need to handle state emergencies. And that number falls to 49% once Guard equipment needed for war, like weapons, is factored in. 49% ready, 53% ready. This is what Bush and these neocon Project for New American Century right-wing bastards have done to us. It just every day it's something else. The general said, quote, "Our problem right now is that our equipment is at an all-time low. We have the most skilled, trained, and full forces we've ever had, but our equipment is not where it needs to be." Notice that word, where it needs to be. Now, this whole issue of lack of equipment was highlighted last month when that tornado hit the town of Greensburg, Kansas, remember? And Kansas Governor Kathleen Sebelius, who I believe is Republican, is she a Republican? Not that it matters. Well, it does, because if she's a Democrat, they immediately accuse this woman of, I don't know, being a whore in her past life or something, anything to discount what she's saying. But Governor Sebelius said the recovery process would take longer because so much of that state's National Guard equipment had been sent to Iraq in order to occupy a country we have no business even being involved in, much less being involved in death and dying. General Blum said the equipment problem is the result of long-term strategy of assuming risk by under-equipping and underfunding the Guard. The Republicans have been in control since when? 1994? Aren't they always screaming about how the Democrats have defunded, underfunded, destroyed the military? And Americans sit back on their lard asses and believe it. They believe it. Blum said, quote, "Now that the Guard is no longer merely a strategic reserve, but an operational force overseas and here at home, the strategy of underfunding it is being seriously reexamined." You know what that means. You know what this general is really saying. I can't repeat what the general means. But use your imagination. He's essentially saying, where the F is our money, our equipment, our trucks? Yeah, he said Guard units nationwide need new trucks, new Humvees, modern aircraft, weapons. Oh, my God. Current funding projections will get the National Guard up to 75%. Remember, it's at 53 now. 75% of what it needs by 2013. That's 6 years from now. And he was appointed by this irresponsible bastard in the White House. Oh, my God, it just doesn't stop. Now, this is it's not actually breaking news, but it's about 6 hours old. You know, all this talk about this airport plot, the JFK airport plot to blow up airports and you know, how many people have been arrested now? Four people? This comes from Australian Broadcasting Corporation, ABC, in Oz, not ABC here. And according to one of the suspect's daughters, now, you take it for whatever. You know, we all know now, right, that all Muslims are liars. All, especially Arab Muslims, they're all liars. They all want to eat the hearts of Christians and murder all the Jews. We all know that. What, that's not true? Well, isn't that what is very subtly and subliminally being fed into America's collective consciousness, right? Christians, Jews, good. Muslims, bad, 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 bad! Tear, kill, eat Christian babies! Wait a minute, I thought that was the Jews. No, 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 they don't do that anymore! Now it's the Muslims! Oh, do the Christians ever eat Jewish or Muslim babies? No, 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 Christians, good! Jews, good! Muslims, eat Christian babies, kill! I mean, isn't that the subliminal message? Well, a little bit more on this story when we come back. Stick around if I haven't scared the hell out of you. I'm Mike Malloy. This is NovAm Radio.
Plenty capable of conducting foreign policy for the United States in a way that reflects positively on my nation.
No, you're not. 26 before the hour. All right. The four suspects in this alleged terror plot to bomb a New York airport were set up in an elaborate plan by the U.S. Republican Party to retain hold of the White House. That's according to the daughter of one of the arrested suspects. Her name is Huda Ibrahim. She is the daughter of one of four men accused of plotting acts of terrorism against the United States. Says U.S. justice officials engaged in entrapment in breaking up this so-called plot. She's 20 years old. She's speaking on behalf of the Trinidad and Tobago and the Guyanese Shiite Muslim community. She read from a prepared statement at a press conference at a local hotel. She says the FBI informant that was key to breaking up the alleged plot had presented himself as an Islamic missionary from the United States while visiting the homes of two of the people arrested. The FBI's informant, whom she called the source, was, quote, the only person culpable of any of the activities mentioned in the complaint, she said. She went on to say, the source visited our brothers with a specific intent to entrap them in activities they know nothing about, never agreed to, and did not participate in. Now, her 62-year-old father, a 56-year-old former Guyanese parliamentarian, Abdul Qadir, along with Russo De Freitas and Abdel Noor, both of Guyanese heritage, allegedly plotted to blow up fuel tanks and pipelines at JFK International Airport in New York City. Ibrahim, a Trinidadian, and Mr. Qadir appeared in Trinidad court on Monday while Mr. Noor gave himself up to local authorities yesterday. All three men are facing extradition to the U.S., where De Freitas has already been arraigned. Now, back to the daughter who says, quote, "We believe that the persons responsible for the rest of our brothers are doing it for a purpose other than the protection of the people in the interests of the United States." She goes on to say they have apparently done so in the interest of shoring up a lame duck presidency and increasing the lame chances of the Republican Party being returned to power in November 2008. Her father is a retired government accounts clerk in Trinidad? No, Guyana. She says Ibrahim barely knew two of the suspects. She also says her father was afraid to fly, was not computer literate, and does not use the Internet. She swears, she gives an oath, that no one arrested has participated in any terrorist plot against the United States. Now, this is reported by the Australian Broadcasting Corporation. I don't know, maybe it's being reported in the U.S. I frankly don't give a damn. I really don't. I noticed one of the items on somewhere on the news today. I don't know where it was. Hell, maybe it was Entertainment Tonight, although I doubt it. It might have been CNN or MSNBC. One of the stories was that... who's the bad girl, the one living, you know, she hangs out with Nicole Richie, the other one. Paris Hilton is in her third day in jail now, and the big question was, did she have to submit to a body cavity search? Christ. So I didn't see anything about the alleged plot, and the fact that, you know, once again, what do you think, Truth Seeker? You know, any government that will assist in an attack on this country, as the Bush crime family did on September 11th, 2001, either actively or passively, but there was assistance, or it never could have happened. Any government, any leadership, any group of murderers like that who happen to find themselves in control of the country, who allow or permit or design or participate in any way, actively or passively, in that sort of an attack, is to be believed when they say 6 years later, oh, we found four guys who are going to blow up JFK. Oh, they lie about everything. They lied us into an invasion and an occupation. They've lied 3,500 American soldiers dead and hundreds of thousands of Iraqis dead. And we're supposed to believe this nonsense about blowing up the fuel tanks at JFK off, for God's sake. But they've been indicted. Or will be. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, and by the way, lead editorial in the... New York Times today, Gitmo, a national disgrace, to which I, when I read this morning over my coffee, went, duh. But what the editorial is about is that a couple of military judges this week have ruled that that the special detention system that we are now a part of because we're Americans. You know, we're a part of torture. We're a part of all sorts of lies and murderous behavior. But that special detention system is so fundamentally corrupt that two of the people who have been held there for God knows how long were ordered, the charges against them were dismissed. The military judges said the Pentagon managed to get them declared enemy combatants, but not unlawful enemy combatants. Huh? You see, enemy combatants is one thing, but unlawful enemy combatants is something else again. And apparently, the crack United States Pentagon didn't get them classified the right way. Unlawful enemy combatants, which makes them eligible for torture. Military tribunals, no protection whatsoever, no habeas corpus, no attorneys, no nothing, just to stand there and say, what are you talking about, and hear the judge say you're guilty, go to the firing squad. The law in question here says only unlawful combatants may be tried by military commissions. These two guys were identified as enemy combatants. The word unlawful was left off. Now, here we go. Are you ready? Lawful combatants are those who among other things, primarily wear uniforms and carry weapons openly. They are protected by the Geneva Conventions that we no longer acknowledge. But get that. Lawful combatants are those who wear uniforms and carry weapons openly. Uh-oh. What about the hired killers, the private contractors that we have scattered all over Iraq and Afghanistan and God knows only knows where else? What about these guys who wander around in their sunglasses and their khakis and, yeah, they carry their weapons openly. Oh, sure they do. What about them? Are they considered lawful or unlawful combatants if they are snatched? Now, the last time three of these people were snatched, do you remember what happened? They were burned alive and their charred corpses were dragged through the streets and then hung, and that's the right word because they were already dead, hung from a bridge over the Tigris, or was it the Euphrates? Remember that? And, oh, didn't we all get pissed off and go, oh, the dirty savages, referring to the Iraqis. Of course, what were these contractors doing? Well, in the first place, they were unlawful combatants, right? By our definition. By the Iraqis' definition, they don't give a damn who's lawful and unlawful. Their country has been invaded. Their government turned into, they've been turned into a failed state. Oh, I'm sure they just are thrilled that we hanged Saddam Hussein. But what have they got in replace of Saddam Hussein? They don't exist anymore. Iraq is nothing. It's being dismembered even as we speak. What did I hear today? That the Turks are ready to invade northern Iraq so that they can kill all the Kurds? Everywhere Bush goes, everywhere he goes, he leaves a trail of incompetence and death and destruction and murder and mayhem and bombing and mass graves. This guy is just unbelievable. Now, what do you think is going to happen with this ruling by these military judges? Obviously, Cheney and the rest of these bastards will file an appeal. Where do you appeal this? I have no idea. Do you go to the Judge Advocate General's office? Where do you go with an appeal? Do you go to the Supreme Court? We called them enemy combatants or these thugs at Guantanamo. Made a mistake, left off the word unlawful. What's an unlawful enemy combatant? Somebody who's out there murdering and killing and sniping and blowing stuff up, but is not wearing an official uniform of an official country. Like the private contractors we hire. And like every single insurgent in Iraq and Afghanistan and the occupied territories and southern Lebanon and northern Lebanon and wherever else these people exist. They don't have the money for the uniforms. By God, they have money for the weapons so they can kill the invader, whoever the invader is. Doesn't this make you sick? I mean, doesn't it make you sick? Unlawful combatants. Unlawful enemy combatants, we can torture and do anything we want to with. But if our unlawful enemy combatants, by our own definition, are captured and tortured and burned alive and hung from a bridge, oh, well, that's a crime against Jesus or something, isn't it?
Wearing a mask and gloves to get a mail. I know a older guy that lost 12 close peeps on 911. This is serious biz. By time Bush is done, you won't know what time it is. If it's wartime or jail time, time for promises and time to figure out where the enemy is. The same devils that you used to love to hate. They got you so gassed and shook now. You scared to debate. The same ones that traded books for guns, smuggled drugs for fun, that had fun letting off 41. But now it's all about NYPD caps and
Truth Seekers, time to snuggle up with your favorite screamer, more Mike Malloy.
Ten before the hour. If you do a little checking on Russell DeFreitas, I guess that's how you pronounce his name. He's one of the four alleged terror suspects who is going to blow up the fuel tanks and just cause all sorts of havoc at JFK. If you do a little checking, you can go to cannonfire.blogspot.com. If you go to Newsday.com, you have to wade through a lot of propaganda before you get to the key, what I consider to be the key sentence. Bonnie sent this to me. DeFreitas, the American citizen involved here, worked for Evergreen Airlines. Do a Wikipedia on Evergreen Airlines or go to cannonfire.blogspot.com and find out what Evergreen Airlines is all about. It is a CIA front operation. It's been in existence since 1960. They have been involved in more murder and mayhem. They're kind of like Air America. No, not the radio network. I'm talking about the original Air America, which was a CIA operation in the Far East. That was one of the reasons we picked the name Air America. It was a joke. It was supposed to be ironic. Nobody got it, apparently. All right, maybe a few people did. But Evergreen Airlines is nothing more and nothing less than a CIA front operation that has been used to smuggle weaponry to the Egyptian dictator. It's been used in South America and Central America to carry weapons. So one of the four plotters, Russell DeFreitas, used to work for Evergreen Airlines. What did he do? Oh, let's call him a baggage handler. How would that be? When's the last time he worked for him? 1995. Who set this up? A drug informant. A drug informant? I thought this was terror. Well, yeah, you know. So somebody facing heavy time for drugs. So what about the guys in Trinidad and Tobago? What are they? Drug dealers? No. They are incipient terrorists ready to blow up the fuel tanks at JFK International Airport. So you see how wonderful the Bush crime family has protected us. Go to Newsday.com and read the story. Oh, my God. Read what the federal attorneys there are saying. Oh, this would have been a bloodbath. It would have made September 11, 2001 look like a teddy bear picnic. Who are you going to believe? I don't know anymore. Huh? Do you believe the daughter of one of the suspects? Do you find it interesting that DeFreitas worked for a CIA front operation? Do you find it quizzical that a drug informant set this all up? Oh, my God. Do you know which way is up? How many fingers am I holding up right now? What do you see?
Four.
No. Five. It's just madness, isn't it? What are we supposed to believe? When we come back after the break, I'm going to tell you about this guy, Dr. James Holsinger. I heard our Air America newscaster guy, Bill Crowley, kind of mentioned this story at the top of the hour right before we came on the air, and he may mention it again. If you listen online, you probably will hear, or if you listen to an Air America affiliate, you will probably hear Bill Crowley's newscast. And I think he'll mention Bush's nominee, of course, for Surgeon General, Dr. James Holsinger, and what he's about. Oh, my God. This guy, and I'm going to tell you right now, there's some gamey imagery here. There's no bad words, but there's some sexual. I say gamey because it's not your standard, you know, just come up and kiss somebody on the mouth and say I love you kind of thing. It's a little bit more intense than that. So, fair warning. Every 14-year-old who listens to this program now is on the phone calling all their buddies saying, hey, tune to Malloy. He's going to talk about some of that trash stuff in a minute. I nothing against 14-year-olds, really. I love them. I've had several as children. My kids. And again, whatever you want to believe, according to the Associated Press, who sent this to me? Dave sent this to me. Hundreds of Turkish soldiers crossed into northern Iraq today pursuing Kurdish guerrillas. The reports came amid worries. This is according to the Associated Press. Believe what you want. This came amid worries Turkey might launch an offensive, touching off a conflict with U.S.-backed Iraqi Kurds in one of Iraq's most stable regions, right? The U.S. is urging its NATO ally, Turkey, not to strike. And Turkey's foreign minister denied any incursion occurred. Yeah. Okay. Incursion? Invasion? What are you talking about? Oh, man. So what do you think? Don't you get tired of coming to this program every night and listening to this stuff? No, don't send emails to Nova. Is Mike going to quit? No. But it just, you know, sometimes it occurs to me that it just gets, how long do you report on and involve yourself in and read about and listen to, I'm talking about you and me, all this madness before we start to lose it? Seriously. That's a question to take to the Nova M radio chat room. There's a live chat going on right now. Billy Foster, our chief information officer. By God, that makes Billy an executive in the company, right? Ah. Next time I see him, I'll have to say Mr. Foster, I guess. Anyway, go to NovaMradio.com if you are a founding member and type in your password and your username. That's right, username and password. I'm just drawing so many blanks tonight. and see what the chat's all about. I'll see you after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. Nova M Radio is what you're listening to. Welcome back. 6:30 past the hour. I asked earlier in the program how the where the Bush crime family will appeal the decision by the military judges that two of the people being held in our torture facility in Guantanamo have to the charges against them have to be dropped because they were designated as enemy combatants, not unlawful enemy combatants, So I said, well, obviously the Bush crime family will appeal. Where will they appeal? Kathy in Green Bay writes, on one of the news shows, someone reported that the appeal goes to a special court authorized by the same law that authorized this system of so-called justice. But, oh, yeah, Bush hasn't appointed anyone to that court yet. Jesus, God. Do you all know who Nora Ephron is? Of course you do. She's the author of Crazy Salad and Heartburn and... she did the screenplay for When Harry Met Sally and Sleepless in Seattle, yada, 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 yada. Kind of a droll comedic writer. I've always liked what Nora Ephron has written. Didier in Boston sent this to me. It's up at Huffington Post. How to foil a terrorist plot in 7 simple steps. Keep this in mind. I'm going to share this with you. Keep it in mind regarding the... JFK plot, okay? 1, in order to foil a terrorist plot, you must first find a terrorist plot. This is not easy. 2, not just anyone can find and then foil a terrorist plot. You must have an incentive. The best incentive is to be an accused felon, looking at a long prison term. Under such circumstances, your lawyer will explain to you you may be able to reduce your sentence by acting as an informant in a criminal case, preferably one involving terrorists. 3, the fact that you do not know any actual terrorists should not in any way deter you. Necessity is the mother of invention. If you can find the right raw material, say a sad, sick, lonely, drunk, deranged, disgruntled, or just plain anti-American Muslim somewhere in the United States, well, you can make your very own terrorist. Four. Now the good part begins. Money! The FBI will give you lots of money to make your own, your very own terrorist out, take him out to lots of dinners where you, wearing a wire, can record yourself making recommendations to him about possible targets and weapons that might be used in the impending terrorist attack that your very own terrorist is going to mastermind with your help. It will even buy you a computer so you can go to Google Earth in order to show your very own terrorist a top secret aerial image of the target you have suggested. Five, more money! The FBI will give you even more money to travel to foreign countries with your very own terrorist and will make suggestions about terrorist groups you can meet while in said foreign countries. Six, months and even years will pass in this fashion while you essentially get the FBI to pay for everything you do. Incidentally, be sure your lawyer negotiates your expense account well in advance, or you may be forced, as the informant was in the Buffalo terrorist case, you may be forced to protest your inadequate remuneration by setting yourself on fire in front of the White House. Seven, at a certain point, something will go wrong. You may have trouble recruiting other people to collaborate with your very own terrorist, who is, as you already know, just an ordinary guy in a really bad mood. Or, alternatively, the terrorist cell you have carefully cobbled together may malfunction and fail to move forward, probably as a result of sheer incompetence or of simply not having been genuinely serious about the acts of terrorism you were going to urge it to commit. At this point, you may worry that the FBI is going to realize that there isn't much of a terrorist plot going on here at all, just a case of entrapment. Do not despair. The FBI is way ahead of you. The FBI knows perfectly well what's going on. The FBI has as much at stake as you do. So before it can be obvious to the world that there's no case, the FBI will arrest your very own terrorist, hold a press conference, and announce that a huge terrorist plot has been foiled. It will, of course, be forced to admit that this plot did not proceed beyond the pre-planning stages, that no actual weapons or money were involved, and that the plot itself was not technically feasible. But that will not stop the story from becoming a front-page episode all over America, and within hours, boilerplate for all the Republican politicians who believe that you need to arrest a homegrown terrorist now and then to, you know, justify the continuing war in Iraq. Everybody will be happy, except for the schmuck you schmickled into becoming a terrorist. And no one really cares about him anyway. So, congratulations! You have foiled a terrorist plot! Way to go! I love her. Didier in Boston, thanks for sending that to me. That's up at Huffington Post. Nora Ephron.
Bush's nominee for Surgeon General, Dr. James Holsinger, has come under fire this week for his anti-gay politics, first documented by Bible Belt blogger Frank Lockwood. This is from Richard Kim, blogging at The Nation. By day, Holsinger teaches health sciences at the University of Kentucky, where he was chancellor of the Chandler Medical Center. By night, however, the good doctor is a Bible-thumping reverend with a degree in biblical studies from Asbury Theological Seminary and a seeming fascination of antipathy toward homosexuals. Holsinger, you see, founded the Hope Springs Community Church, which is one of those so-called recovery ministries that caters to alcoholics and drug addicts and sex addicts and those seeking to walk out of that homosexual lifestyle. We're not busy endorsing ex-gay conversion therapy. Mr. Holsinger, or Dr. Holsinger, served on the highest court of the United Methodist Church, where he voted to remove a lesbian pastor from her position. And today, the Human Rights Campaign released a document authored by Holsinger as a member of the United Methodist Church's Committee to Study Homosexuality. Its title is Pathophysiology of Male Homosexuality.
Holsinger's religious tract cum scientific paper is a fascinating window into the perverse imagination of homophobia. In essence, Holsinger argues that male-female, quote, reproductive systems are fully complementary, end quote, because, quote, anatomically the vagina is designed to receive the penis, end quote. The remainder of his paper is a graphic account of the, quote, delicate, end quote, rectum, which is, quote, incapable of protection if objects that are large, sharp, or pointed are inserted into it, end quote. From there, Dr. Holsinger continues to discuss what he imagines are the pains of anal sex. From fist fornication and sphincter injuries to laceration, perforations, and death seen in connection with anal eroticism, end quote, end quote, end quote. Sharp objects. Deaths seen in connection with anal eroticism, gadzooks. Now, I've been around the block 1 or 10 times, and I don't know any gay men who have put scissors, you know, down there, much less died from it. Obviously, of course, the barely mentioned but palpably anxious context in which Holsinger connects death with anal eroticism is the AIDS epidemic. And it should come as no surprise that his paper was part of a larger pseudo-medical moral discourse in which gay men's mode of sex were blamed for AIDS. You know, the death we deserved, the sexual suicide we courted, writes Richard Kim. The flip side of Dr. Holsinger's lurid speculation is the dangerous presumption that because heterosexual sex is, quote, natural, it is safe. Safe from HIV or other sexually transmitted diseases? And the trauma and injury that Dr. Holsinger seems to so feverishly eager to attribute to gay anal sex. Now, we know, tragically and beyond any possible doubt, that heterosexual sex is not safe unless one practices it as such. A few years ago, Dr. Holsinger wrote his little brief against male-male anal sex, and a few years after that, then Surgeon General Jocelyn Elder suggested at a UN conference on AIDS that masturbation might be taught to young people as a mode of reducing sexual risk. On this point, she was absolutely correct. But for even daring to mention the M word, she was lampooned by the Christian right and eventually asked to resign by a cowardly Bill Clinton, who in retrospect might have paid more attention to Dr. Elder's and spent less time inserting foreign objects into inappropriate places himself. But no matter! The doctor who gave sound clinical medical advice was fired, while the doctor who engaged in wild, graphic, and unsubstantiated fantasies about gay sex will most likely assume the helm as, quote, America's chief health educator, end quote, the Surgeon General. And you wonder why we have a health care crisis in this country? Richard Kim, blogging at thenation.com. Anybody still listening?
My friend, witch doctor, he taught me what to say. My friend, witch doctor, he taught me what to do. I know that you'll be mine when I say this to you. Ooh, ee, ooh, ah, ah, ting, tang, walla, walla, bing, bang. Ooh, ee, ooh, ah, ah, ting, tang, walla, walla, bang, bang. Ooh, ee, ooh, ah, ah, ting, tang, walla, walla, bing, bang. Ooh, ee, ooh, ah, ah, ting, tang, walla, walla, bang, bang. You've been keeping love from me just like you were a miser. And I'll admit I wasn't very smart. So I went out and found myself a guy that's so much wiser. And he taught me the way to win your heart. My friend, witch doctor, he taught me what to say. My friend, witch doctor, he taught me what to do. I know.
Your sister. I am a
get this guy out of the way. Mark is calling from Virginia. Hey, Mark, welcome to the program.
Hey, how are you? I just want to say, you know, you guys ought to be saluting the men and women who helped unfoil that.
You said you guys. What guys?
Well, I just heard you reading that email, and you seem to be agreeing with it.
Let me ask you something, Mark. What makes you think it's the truth?
Well, okay, they catch the guys. They have their entire...
They caught them doing what?
Planning.
What do you mean planning? Did they have weapons? No. Did they have passports? No. Did they have plans drawn up? No. Did they have...
Wait, Mark.
Don't go insane on me.
Okay.
What makes you believe anything that comes from a government that lied us into a war?
See, you guys are hung up.
Just try to answer. Try, Mark. Try to focus. Try to focus. What makes you believe anything that comes from a government that lied us into a war? Try to answer, Mark.
They didn't lie us into a war.
They didn't. Goodbye, Mark. Goodbye,
no, fuck
Mark.
You.
Adios, Mark. Please don't. Let's not put Mark back on again ever. Oh, God, I hate people like that. You know, I can't stand them. He's such a twit. He has no brain, no moral compass, no sense of direction. He's a Republican, and he probably believes the universe was created 7,000 years ago. Do you realize that in the Republican debates, so-called, they're not debates. I have never seen any. I've watched several excerpts. Obviously, I don't watch the debates because we're doing our program. But I've watched some clips. And we were going to play some of them and then decided why. These are insane people. I've never seen anything like this. You have Mitt Romney, who looks exactly like one of the major car dealers here in the metro Atlanta area and sounds like him. And then the rest of these freaks. And I'm sorry to all you people who think the sun rises and sets in Ron Paul's major body orifice. Please stop it. Ron Paul doesn't believe in anything other than that the government should do other than defend the country. No Social Security, no universal health care, no Medicare, no Medicaid, no interstate highway system, no regulatory agencies, nothing. Ron Paul is a right-wing Nazi libertarian. Please stop talking about Ron Paul. Because he's a libertarian, he doesn't believe in foreign engagements, foreign involvement. So all of a sudden he's anti-war. And I hear so many people on the so-called progressive left just sucking up to this freak. Please stop. Ron Paul, if he were elected president, the first thing he would do is throw your mama off of Social Security and wouldn't even think twice. Stop it. But to see these moral midgets standing up there, oh, my God. And what is it? What do we decide? Somebody told me six of them don't even believe in evolution? Oh, my God. How could that be? Well, that's, come on, Mike. What do you mean, how could that be? They're Republicans, just like Mark the idiot that just called.
Evolution didn't happen. That's communism. It says in the Bible.
Yeah. And it says in the Bhagavad Gita that old Mark is probably on his 7 millionth journey through. So what? Another one bites the dust. I could relate. Could you relate? Another one bites the dust. Jerry Wonder, fried up. Another one bites the dust. Yeah, cannabis and John Forte. Another one bites the dust. Yeah. Dirty cash and baby three. Another one fights the dust. And another one claps on Freddie Mercury. Another one fights.
be left out? Join your friends at the NSA and Homeland Security and listen to Mike Malloy every single night. They never miss a minute.
Twenty-six before the hour. I got this email from Irish Dave. Let me just share it with you real quick. It says, Mike, this is the 40th anniversary of the last night I spent in La Grande, Oregon, before reporting for induction, and the occasion of one of my last conversations with a high school classmate who was also shipping out the next day for the NOM. Tom Hewitt is his name. He was one of those bulletproof warrant officer helicopter pilots. He won the Purple Heart, Distinguished Flying Cross, etc. Years later, he traveled to the Middle East to teach the Shah's pilots, Shah of Iran. He sent his Texas-born and bred wife home shortly before the overthrow and got out just ahead of the revolution. His employer was, wait for it, Evergreen Aviation. Small world filled with co-incidents. LOL, Irish Dave. Yeah, Evergreen being the airline that the American-born so-called terrorist who was, incipient terrorist, who was recently arrested in New York City, blah, 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 blah. That's who he worked for, too. Jesus, I hate these people. All right, look, I got this about an hour ago, and before we start taking calls, I just want to share it with you, okay? This is from Bruce in California. Mike, thanks for acknowledging D-Day. My father was one of the men storming the beach at Omaha that day. He passed away at the age of 92 in 2005, but this day never goes by without remembering. He wrote a poem about D-Day. I thought I'd share it with you. You may want to share it with your listeners. Well, I read it, and it reminds me of... oh, my God. Who wrote Gunga Din? Rudyard Kipling. I'm having an awful time with names. It reminds me of Rudyard Kipling's writings. It's called D-Day 44. Listen to this. We are the men of 44 who smashed our way through the devil's door, crossing the beaches wet with blood, through fire, flame, and artillery's thud, clawing our way up the jagged cliffs torn by rock after rock, heartened by men's raw courage and the victories at Pointe du Hoc. The Navy was firing from out at sea with shells that weighed more than a ton, destroying bunkers out of sight, crushing them one by one. But still the carnage continued, explosions everywhere, coming from behind the hills and shattering the air. Then as the day was almost done, we breached our way to the top and started to fight our way inland, exhausted and ready to drop. The price we paid lay on the beach, in row after covered row, those heroes of the morning whose blood finally ceased to flow. The sacrifices made on the beaches that day and by air at Saint-Mère Inglisée were laid on our nation's altar, our response to freedom's pleas. So honor the men of 44 who gave all that they had to give to fight for our beloved country and to help other free men to live. Maybe there's a place called Valhalla, a place for the honored dead, a warrior's rest with no fears or pain and with none of war's horrors or dread. If not, then surely their place is assured, hailed by the blessed in heaven's ranks and with the joyful welcome of our Lord as he gives them heartfelt thanks. Never forget those gallant souls who fought to keep you free. But ask yourself in your heart of hearts, what if those battles were fought today, and what if that soldier were me? Writer is Robert Marshall, U.S. Army, 101st Airborne, and the first wave on Omaha Beach. Thanks, Bruce. That was really, that reminds me of Rudyard Kipling, doesn't it? Thanks for sharing that with us. And if you don't know what we're talking about, today is the 63rd anniversary of D-Day, the invasion of Normandy, June 6, 1944. And yeah, it does mean something. There's a climatologist. The guy is Bill Patzert. He works for NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory. At CNN.com, on one of the blogs, the writer Randy Kay says that I guess it's a she. She interviewed this guy, and he said the only thing that's going to reverse the effects of global warming is, quote, a good old fashioned pandemic that wipes out millions, end quote. Oh my God! Probably true. According to Randy Kay, this scientist, Patzert, got a rare glimpse into the future by studying the past. He found that in the last 100 years, the average daily temperature in California jumped 5 degrees, the average nightly temperature jumped 7 degrees, and the annual number of extreme heat days, those over 90 degrees Fahrenheit, multiplied by 12. He said, quote, "Now I realize normal is just a cycle on a washing machine. We're no longer living in normal world. We're living in a warmer world," end quote. So what does that mean for Californians? Well, it could mean steamy, smoggy, hot, fiery summers around the corner with myriad consequences. Los Angeles County Fire Chief for the Forestry Division said that with the ground so hot, brush fires no longer occur just a few months out of the year, but all year long. And it goes on and on. Infectious disease experts such as William K. Risen at University of California, Davis, and microbiologist Stephen Morse at Columbia University suggest extreme heat this summer may even bring tropical diseases to Southern California. The flu, which circulates year-round in the tropics, could do the same here. And the mosquitoes? Look out. The world is no longer normal. Well, damn. Really? All right, let's do some phone calls. You want to do that? The phone number here is 800-989-1480. Let's start with David, who is calling from Blaine, Washington. Hey, David, welcome to the program.
Hi, Mike.
Hey.
Great to hear your voice. You know, speaking of the corpses hanging from the bridge in Fallujah that you were mentioning earlier, wasn't the killing of the Blackwater contractors the reason why Rumsfeld II ordered the WMDs such as white phosphorus to be used on the Iraqis?
I believe so, in violation of, I know...
Completely.
You know, talking about the rules of war is a total oxymoron, but on the other hand, some parameters were established, and one of them is not to use Willie Peter, as they call it, to because it's so vile and just eats right through you while you're still alive.
Yeah, and the Italian journalist, her name escapes me, and she was working on the story, and she was about to blow the lid off of what happened in Fallujah. She was abducted for a month
Sagrena?
Before Berlusconi
negotiated
her release.
Giuliana Sagrena, I believe.
Yeah, and upon her release and on her way to the airport and to her freedom, her convoy was ambushed.
Yeah.
And it was said that Berlusconi was in communication, ongoing communication, while she was being...
shot.
Led through, the checkpoints, and then shot, you know,
right.
Her bodyguard, you know, shielded her, and she was,
right.
Thankfully, her life was spared. So hopefully her documentary will be coming out soon. But about these phony, trumped-up terror plots at JFK or Crawford, Texas, or wherever.
Or Buffalo, New York. Or
yeah, I mean, whatever happened to
Detroit, Michigan.
Yeah.
Some Arab speakers go out and buy 500 cheap cell phones to send wherever in the Middle East and make some money, and they're immediately accused of terrorism. Jesus.
Boy, and those that rainbow colored coded terror alert sure disappeared. I mean, they have not used that.
Well, it's not an election cycle, and you know, they were mocked so many times. Never mind.
Oh God, is right. And the Pentagon, my final thing that I wanted to share with you is that I watched the daily Pentagon briefings on C-SPAN, especially one today, was just such a piece of work. I mean, the general conducting the briefing, I can't remember what his name was saying that attacks on U.S. forces were down 40%.
Mm-hmm.
And a person in the press corps asked him, based on what?
Yeah.
And he like had this look on his face and the cat got his tongue and he couldn't elaborate on
Now I'm sorry, who was asked the question?
The general that was conducting today's Pentagon briefing.
Oh, okay. Okay.
I'm sorry, I don't have his name.
Yeah, but, that's all right. That's okay.
But the look on his face was priceless, and which leads me to my final point. In the Lincoln Group, who was under the military contract to manufacture fake news for the Pentagon?
Right.
Are they still doing that? I mean, we cannot trust the Pentagon.
Of course they're still doing it. That's why Condoleezza Rice, her statements about Chavez not renewing the license of this television station that advocates his violent overthrow, as if that is some huge assault on the democratic process in Venezuela. And Condoleezza Rice is talking about in America, we don't have anything like that. We have a free, unfettered, honest press that talks about anything it wants to. Now, I brought this up in detail last night. I just about fell out of my chair.
You know, in rural Washington, we call Condoleezza either Condoleezza or Condoleezza a lot, depending on our mood.
Well, she represents the oil industry, always has, always will, just like most of the people in the Bush crime family. Hey, got to leave it there. Thanks, David.
Thank you, Mike.
Take care.
You too.
And even the Jordan River has bodies floating, but you tell me.
The Mike Malloy Show on Nova M Radio. Talk radio matters here.
Ten before the hour. Back to your phone calls. Robert is calling from San Francisco. Hey, Robert.
Hi, Mike.
How you doing?
I heard something really, well, that could be better. These guys are driving me nuts here.
No kidding.
I mean, last night I'm listening and this guy is talking about some sort of a terror attack involving six cities in the United States and nuclear weapons, and I immediately thought about Bush updating our nuclear arsenal and miniaturizing nukes and how that would really create more non-proliferation, you know, or proliferation, rather, of nuclear weapons, because
right.
They're smaller and easier for people to carry. And then they're talking about moving the NORAD and NORCOM in Cheyenne to another location. All of a sudden, apparently, they're doing it right away, and I'm wondering, oh, my God.
Yeah, probably to a storefront in Dearborn, Michigan or something.
Oh, well, you know.
This administration, you know, what it doesn't screw up, it craps on. I don't know how else to say it. It everything the Bush crime family touches, it destroys or renders ineffective or reverses what its function is supposed to be. And it truly, I don't know how we're going to survive another year and a half. By the end of a year and a half, the entire world is going to get together some night, and they're going to say, okay, it's time to nuke America.
Yeah. Well, I believe in good government, but in a time and age where you're in de facto government that's illegitimate and unelected, and they're taking us down this road, I can only say to our security agents, this is your time. It's your time to stand up.
Yeah, I, in the first place, we have an illegal government in place, and we've spent the past at least the past 100 years running around the world pretending like we're only interested in legitimate governments, governments of the people, by and for the people, no matter if it's in the Philippines or in El Salvador or in Vietnam or, you know, wherever the hell it is. And here we have one in this country that is totally illegitimate, not to mention all the illegal acts it's committing, and yet it's unimpeachable. Can't impeach him. Don't want impeachment. No. That would be the American public's poor little heart couldn't stand that, I guess.
Well,
you know?
I think there's a lot to be said for the attacks on the Democrats. I think that they're terrorized. I mean, can you imagine masked gunmen with assault weapons crawling all over the congressional building after the anthrax attacks? I mean, who knows what they were told behind closed doors? You know, you and your families will be okay You just do everything we can, we'll tell you to. I mean, we really don't know what's going on behind the scenes, but I can tell you, you can tell that these guys aren't interested in really going up against Bush and going after him and Karl Rove the way they could.
Yeah, I can't quite understand it. I don't know what the reason is. I know a lot of people feel like you do, that some sort of deliberate threat was made, you know, sit down, shut up, and watch us destroy the world. But I can't accept that one, Robert. I really can't, because I've got to believe that at least some of the people to whom that kind of a threat would have been made would you know, just say F you. You know, I'm an American. You're not going to talk to me like that, and would go public.
Well, you remember the Wellstone family, and even Daschle. They asked him. I mean, Bush and Cheney went to them and said, "Don't investigate congressional investigation of 9/11. Don't investigate it." Well, then Paul Wellstone, the NTSB report comes back and it says, "We have no idea why that senator's plane crashed."
Well, I understand. I really do. And I'm about, a silly millimeter away from just tossing all caution to the winds and buying into every conspiracy idea that is anti-Bush, anti-American. I really am. I don't have any problem with listening to so-called conspiracy theories, because I think everything that's happened in this country since 1958 has been part of a conspiracy theory or a conspiracy. And I've got to keep partially a clear mind, I guess is what I'm saying, Robert.
Yeah.
But I'm not one of these people that berates somebody who doesn't believe the single bullet theory from Dallas in 1963, or who doesn't believe that the towers came down not as a result of a controlled explosion. You know, I don't berate people. I listen, and I've said before, there's two things I will never accept. First, chronologically, is that Lee Harvey Oswald acted on his own and assassinated the President of the United States. Secondly, that what occurred in this country on September 11, 2001 was a result of 19 hijackers, 13 or 14 of whom were from Saudi Arabia, coming over here and defeating the security systems and the defense mechanisms of the most powerful, aggressive, violent, vicious nation in the history of the human race with box cutters. No thanks. Ain't going to buy it.
Well, they had some help, Tom. But did you see the Lugosi thing on the JFK assassination, where he wrote this 1,100 or 1,600 page tome, basically saying that Oswald was the only guy that did it? I mean, you know, it's because of the Internet that we have a real idea about what really happened on that day. And it's because of the Internet we have a real idea what happened on 9/11. The problem is, how are we going to get back to constitutional government?
Well, that's a good question. I know what Jefferson said.
Oh God, I really don't want to go there myself either. But
I know neither do I. But
you know, some people say, "What would you really want something like that?" You know, if you had to go to those links, I mean, and there are people that are working with technologies that produce peace, like the Maharishi effect, and the 100th monkey idea thing. I think the world is waking up fast, really fast now, and I just hope that the forces of light can be where they need to be. It's not a thing about majority. These people have shown us it's not about majority. It's about critical mass. And we are getting that level.
Let's hope that's the case, Robert. Hey, listen, thanks for checking in, pal. I got a break here. All right?
All right.
Take care. We'll be back after the break. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio Network. back about 7 past the hour. My name is Mike Malloy. This is the Nova M Radio Network. Glad you're here. All right, let's see. Do I have anything else to... There was one other thing here. Actually, two other things. Let me drop them in now and then back to your phone calls. Anybody been holding on over an hour? No? Vicky's getting close to it, but... Let's see here. God Hits the Campaign Trail. This is another one of the blogs at CNN. This is by Claire Brinberg, a producer at CNN. And what she talks about is Bush's name was mentioned 7 times in last night's Republican debate, but God was mentioned 21 times by the Republican candidates, and she's not even counting the, you know, the God bless yous and I hope to God and, you know, so on and so forth. She writes, this week the campaign trail turned into an old-fashioned camp meeting with Republicans and Democrats alike declaring Jesus Christ as their personal savior. Yeah, I can't. What the hell has happened to these people, right? I mean, everybody running around trying to out-Jesus each other. It's just incredible. Do we have a Jewish candidate this year? I guess we don't, do we? Excuse me. Lieberman, when he ran with Gore, I don't remember Gore invoking the Christian Messiah's name. Maybe did, but what was Lieberman supposed to do then? Just stand there and go, "Oi, okay, whatever." But here they are at the Sojourners Conference on Monday. Hillary and Clinton and John Edwards gave deeply personal testimonies of how the Lord saw them through their darkest hours. Last night's Republican debate, Arkansas Governor Mike Huckabee, an ordained Baptist minister, delivered a moving sermon on the glory of creation. John McCain spoke about the hand of God moving in the world today. Oh, and Mitt Romney said no man would tear him from his church. Well, who's trying, Mitt? You've already violated every single tenet of your church, so what difference does it make? And as Claire Brinberg writes, who are these people running for anyway? Or what are these people running for anyway? Well, this is the result of the Bush-Rove wedge issue. Bush and Rove proved that millions of Americans are very comfortable hearing their leaders speak openly about faith. What I call ignorance! But that's all right. I shouldn't get so upset about it. But the whole campaign, as Claire Brinberg writes, is starting to feel like a church chat. Do you love Jesus? Well, yeah, I love Jesus. How do you know you love Jesus? Well, I love Jesus because when I was dying of frog bites, an angel appeared and saved me.
The other thing about the Republican debates that just caught my attention was how they were tripping over themselves to say they'd pardon Scooter Libby. What's up with that? I mean, is Dick Cheney that frightening to these people? Oh, I'd pardon him. Oh, yeah.
No, they know that the psychotic base of the Republican Party, psychos all, the Christian psychos and the Wall Street psychos, the Wall Street psychos couldn't care less. You know, it's all sport to them. Hey, y'all keep playing down there and fighting with each other while we continue to make trillions off of hedge funds. What's a hedge fund? Nothing. No, what is it really? Nothing. No, seriously, what's a hedge fund? Nothing. Literally. But we make all kinds of money, so y'all stand. Go ahead, get down there and fight each other about who could out Jesus the other one. Go ahead. Scooter Libby, Irving Lewis Libby, Jr., who was one of the original signers of the PNAC demand, the Project for New American Century demand in 1998, the Bill Clinton invade Iraq. Lewis Scooter Libby, who was one of the people who wrote the PNAC manifesto saying that what this country needed was another Pearl Harbor. Irving Lewis Scooter Libby, Jr., a man who pushed and pushed and pushed and pushed to take this country into an unnecessary, unprovoked attack on a country that couldn't defend itself against, a squad of Marines, much less the entire violence of the U.S. military establishment. Irving Louis Scooter Libby, a PNAC signer, an American Zionist, a man who would take this country into hell if he thought it would benefit the Likud party in Israel. And all of these right-wing Republican Christians, eh? Oh, I'd pardon Scooter. Yeah. What'd he do? What did he do? What did he do?
Well, maybe they're just adopting the tenet of Bush's would-be Surgeon General and just trying to protect his delicate regions from any sort of violation that
all right.
It might be.
All right, Kathy. Now I
adverse
got
a, to his.
I health. Got away with it, but you know. From the Independent of the UK today, bloodshed is spreading to previously stable provinces of Afghanistan, threatening aid efforts as humanitarian workers contend with growing numbers of attacks from insurgents and criminals. Yeah, the headline from this article in The Independent is bloodshed is spreading across Afghanistan, warn aid workers. Afghanistan is another failed state that Bush has created. Pakistan is soon to follow. The aid workers there, the UN World Food Program is one. What else is there? There's several aid workers there, aid organizations who are struggling to take care of people, not to murder people and bomb people, but to take care of them. And what's being reported is a breakdown of any kind of order or law in parts of the country. It's just gone. Afghanistan has become nothing more than a narco state. It functions on a tribal basis, not unlike how it functioned in the 12th century, except now there's a huge demand for opium, and by God, they're supplying it. One of the aid workers said there seems to be no penalty for those who are doing these things, you know, attacking trucks transporting food and to people who desperately need it. One aid worker said, we have had incidents over the past couple of weeks in provinces and districts where we had never had that before and had not had anything for a very long time, no kind of violence at all. But the violence is spreading. Meantime, back here in the United States, the violent crime rate is going up. Measurably so, alarmingly slow. So, when you have an administration that is hell-bent on nothing but war and destruction and death and illegal activities, what the hell? I mean, that does have an effect on the people in the society who are inclined to say something like, well, if George Bush can, Dick Cheney can use the F-bomb, so can I. If Dick Cheney and George Bush can be violent to the rest of the world, I'll be violent in my neighborhood. And off some old lady so I can get enough money for another meth bag. Violence. But Dick Cheney and George Bush are unimpeachable. No, we can't do that. We can't impeach him. No. The only way we'll impeach him if we catch George Bush having oral sex with an intern. Then we'll get him. We'll get him. All right, back to your phone calls. Vicki has now been holding on for over an hour. She's calling from Wichita, Kansas. Hey, Vicki.
Hi, Mike.
How are you?
I'm fine. Glad I finally got through. Hey, we love your show. We listen to it every night.
Thank you so much.
I have a question for you. Last night in the segment, you were talking about the Bohemian Grove.
Yeah.
You brought up an author of a book. Do you recall?
An author of a book.
Yeah.
I brought it up. I bet one of the callers brought it up.
I don't know. You just said what? Something about check out this book.
It Can't Happen Here, the book by Sinclair Lewis about fascism.
That's it?
Okay. Yeah, okay. And I said, in my opinion, it was poorly written. I guess it was written with the language and the tempo and metaphors of the 20s. I believe it was written in the 20s or the 30s. I don't know, and it doesn't matter. But it was about fascism coming to the United States. I'll tell you, if you want to read a better book, read the one by The Plot Against America by who's the guy that wrote Goodbye Columbus and Portnoy's Complaint, and oh my God, Kathy's drawn a blank too. wait a minute, it'll come to one of us. Anyway, it's called
Plot Against America. I'll check it out.
The Plot Against America. Yeah, it's written by the same guy who I'm sure everybody has already Googled this, but the guy that wrote Goodbye Columbus and Portnoy's Complaint, and how many emails have we gotten so far about who wrote it? Oh well. Look, let me put you on hold, Vicki. I'll come back in a second, okay? Because we haven't had a chance to talk. We'll come right back. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M. Philip Roth.
Bang, 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 bang. Boom, 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 boom. Bang, 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 bang. I love the way you walk, and I love the way you talk.
He's the primal scream you suppress. Embrace your inner liberal warrior with Mike Malloy.
Knocks me out off of my feet. Boom, 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 boom.
22 past the hour. We're talking to Vicki in Wichita, Kansas. Yeah, Vicki, the author is Philip Roth. I don't know why I go blank half the time. I guess it's because I'm getting old.
Hey, we all are, Mike.
But the book is The Plot Against America, which has as its theme, it's fiction, obviously, written in the first person, as Philip Roth usually does, and it talks about what would have happened if after Roosevelt's first term, Franklin Roosevelt, if Charles Lindbergh would have been elected president. Lindbergh and Henry Ford and the DuPont family, all these people were noted anti-Semites. They hated Jews. They were Hitler supporters for a number of reasons, not only because of their hatred of Jews, but also because Lindbergh and the rest of these people were fascists. And I don't know why people who are fascists hate to admit they're fascists. There are fascist parties all over Europe, but in this country, it's a word they all try to avoid. Pat Buchanan's a fascist. There are just I think Ron Paul is a fascist. There are all sorts of fascists running around, but if you call them a fascist, they go, "Oh, you're name calling." But anyway, the book is about what would have happened if Charles Lindbergh would have been elected president in 38, I don't know. Anyway, what would have happened if he would have been elected president? He would have formed a non-aggression pact with Hitler, and the story centers around two families in New Jersey, I believe. It's been about a year and a half since I read it, and they're both Jewish families because obviously Philip Roth is Jewish. But it's so much more readable because Roth happens to be a literary genius, as far as I'm concerned, and Sinclair Lewis was barely able to write, as far as I'm concerned. So if you read It Couldn't Happen Here, or It Could Happen Here, I can't even think of the title, don't email me! If you read that one, okay. It's kind of interesting, but I think you'll get over it in the first 100 pages because of the way he writes. It's just very irritating. But Philip Roth, who is just an astonishingly good writer, get that book, The Plot Against America. I think you'll enjoy it in a weird way.
Great, Mike. Thanks so much. I'll check it out.
All right, Vicki. Thanks.
Have a good night.
All right, you too. Appreciate you checking in. David is calling from Spokane, Washington. Hey, David. David, welcome to the program. Hey, David.
David.
David! All right, put him on hold. We'll try him again in a second. Betty. Betty is calling from Santa Rosa, California. Hey, Betty. Oh, Betty's gone. All right. Who's screwing with my phone board here? Let's try. You want to try David again? Let's see if David. No, David's gone. Caroline is calling from Sacramento. Hey, Caroline. Welcome to the program.
Hello, Mr. Malloy.
Hi.
My first time calling you.
Well, welcome aboard, I think.
What I'm calling you for is because you're one of the only people that I know that admits that there's racism in America.
Mm-hmm.
And you've made comments, and I've actually used your comments in school, that white people are prejudiced. They just fight against it.
Yeah, well, I qualified that a little bit. I said people over a certain age. I don't think all people under the age of, say, 30, all white people, are racist. But I do believe that all white people in this country over the age of 40 or 45 are inherently racist, and I expect that they, if they acknowledge that, they struggle against it.
I've mentioned it in a couple of my classes, and I'm in a master's program for criminal justice.
You're what?
In a master's program for criminal justice.
Okay.
And I mentioned it to my teacher. Well, he didn't agree with me at first. But I guess when he went home, he thought about it. And he used the example as, are all men dogs? And I said, all men have they can be dogs, but they fight against being a dog. They fight to be faithful. And so that's what he used as an example to qualify what you said about, white people being racist.
Right. Now, by dogs, you mean cheating on their wives.
Right.
Right.
That a lot of men have
Hey, Caroline, can you hold on a minute? I got to take a break here. Stay there. I'll come right back to you after the break, all right? This is Nova M Radio. We have one open line, so if you want to get in here, 800-989-1480. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
And they say, open up, we're coming inside. You can't run, so you might as well hide. We got the place covered from head to toe, head to toe. Open up, we're coming inside. What's it feel like to know you're gonna die?
Let's see. There I was sitting around the table with foreign leaders, looking at Colin Powell and Condi Rice. Yeah.
You know my pet Negroes. You know, Bush is a classic example of a white man who is a racist down to his toenails. And doesn't realize it. Or realizes it and doesn't give a damn. Back to your phone calls. Caroline. We were talking with Caroline. That's right. All right, Caroline, where were we?
We were talking about racism and how people...
Right, your instructor, your teacher.
Yeah.
All right.
And it's weird because I know that where I work, there is a racist attitude.
Mm-hmm.
I'm one of only three black people in my office.
Mm-hmm.
And because I don't want to talk to anyone, I'm considered antisocial.
Mm-hmm.
I don't go to parties that they go to. I'm antisocial.
Well, all right. Why don't you talk? Why don't you go to parties?
Well, I do laugh and talk, but I'm more to myself than to be in everybody's faces.
All right. Why are you more to yourself?
Because that's just me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not a very trusting person. I've been burnt at jobs before.
Yeah.
So I don't try to get too close to people I work with.
I understand.
And so they have Christmas parties. I don't go to parties with my coworkers.
Right.
And so I'm antisocial. And then one of the words that they always say is, you have potential. You need to prove yourself. But they don't want to give me work. I've been at my job for 6 months. It's a new job for 6 months. And I made binders and copies for the first 2 months.
Yeah.
Now I have no work at all.
Yeah.
And it's funny because they were intimidated by me. My boss said, I was intimidated by you when you first came. How are you intimidated by me when you signed my paycheck? And I think it's because... When they see a strong black woman who's getting education,
right,
they're intimidated by that. But I'm not throwing that in your face. I want to do my job and do a good job so I can get promoted and keep going up. And so,
oh, God, Caroline.
I know that in California, it's very racist. The attitude has not changed. I think it's getting worse than getting better.
Yeah. Well,
I deal with this every day.
As times get worse, people tend to retreat. Whether they're black, white, gay, straight, Jew, Gentile, doesn't matter. People tend to retreat. And Bush is a perfect example of a leader who makes us retreat, makes us fall back into our prejudices and our fears and our bigotry.
Mm-hmm.
So what are you going to do?
Well, my plan is to leave the state of California.
Yeah.
I want to go to a state where they fight for the rights of people. I'm looking for a southern state. I'm thinking about Georgia. Georgia is very racist, too, but the black people there fight for that. See, here it's about money.
Mm-hmm.
If I have a job, I don't care about the person who's under me. But in other states, they do fight and get involved in stuff that's going on in their community. And that's what I want to get involved with. My goal is to be a civil rights attorney. And that's what I plan on doing.
Well, I wish you the best, but have you ever heard the expression non illegitimi carborundum?
No.
Loosely translated, it means don't let the bastards grind you down, okay?
Mm-hmm.
All right, just keep your head up, all right?
Okay, thank you.
All right,
oh,
Carol.
Wait, one more thing.
Yeah,
one
yeah,
thing.
What?
I heard about Bush signing something that makes, if something happens before he leaves the office.
Yes, yes, it's a directive that he signed that gives him total, complete power. More power than Hitler had.
Where can
yes.
I find this? Because people don't believe me at work that I talk to.
Well, to hell with them. Don't try to show it to them. Don't try to convince them. Just leave it alone. They're nutballs, Caroline. Why do you want to get involved with them? But you can find it at
okay.
whitehouse.gov, and it's in the press releases section. Whitehouse.gov, press releases.
Okay.
And you just have to find it that way. But trust me on this. Just keep doing what you're doing and get the hell out of where you are. Don't try to convince folks. Don't even try.
I'm fighting a losing battle, huh?
It's worse than a losing battle. Trust me.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. If you do move, Caroline, give me a holler. Let me know what's going on, okay?
I will. Thank you.
All right. Take
Bye-bye.
Care.
Just because Atlanta is my hometown, I have to say that all of Georgia overall probably is extremely racist, but it's Atlanta itself is very progressive. I mean, we had Martin Luther King.
Well,
I had
yeah,
Condoleezza Rice, I had Colin Powell. I can count them all. But
and we had Cynthia McKinney, and we now have, and we've had for years John Lewis, and we have Shirley Franklin, who is the mayor, and yada, yada, yada. Andrew Young is from here, but there's Atlanta, and then there's Georgia. You know, this is really a suckhole of a state. It really, a lot of people say, well, why do you stay there? I just separate myself from the rednecks the best I can. And I've said before, when I go out and about, like when we go to the North Georgia Mountains or wherever we go, we'll take the pickup truck and put one of my shotguns in the gun rack in the back, and I don't have any stickers, bumper stickers on the back. And I see some of these rednecks. I say, "Yo, hey, what's happening? Hey, wow, yeah, huh?" Rat bastards. All right, I got to share this with you. This comes from Lisa. Lisa, I hope you're listening. Damn, I think Lisa's in Florida. You say you're venting, so all right, Mike. I think I've lost it. I find myself hating people. I hate going to the store or work or school or driving, going to the bank, all of it, because I have to walk among the blubbering idiots of America. I go to work and listen to the southern rednecks, and I mean critter-eating rednecks. These women are two-faced, backstabbing bitches. Oh, yeah, the Republicans, too. I don't talk much at work. I just do my job and go home. I went to the store today, and on the way I had some jackass decide to make an illegal turn in front of my car, almost causing me to crash my car with my child in the back seat. Then I go to the store, and I'm rammed by some freak who doesn't have the common decency to move their cart over a little bit so we can both get through the aisle. Then I'm accosted on the way out of the store by some church member wanting what money I had left, which wasn't much to begin with. At school, I watch my teacher let certain people cheat on their tests. She even helps them answer the questions if they can figure it out after she shows them how to do it. This is college. Makes me wonder how these people get their degrees. I'm tired. So tired. I live in one of the most conservative church freak communities in America. These people are freaking weird in everything they do. They're rude, stupid, and ignorant. I would turn to drugs, but I have a couple of kids who depend on me. I'm watching my country fall apart, and these idiots are the cause of it. Don't worry, Mike. I'm not going to do anything stupid. They're not worth my energy. I'm just blowing some steam. And she signs it, losing it, Lisa B. Ah, Lisa. Lisa, Lisa, Lisa. I know what you mean. Lord have mercy. I know what you mean. But you just, I don't know, you didn't ask me for any advice, and there's nothing more useless than unasked for advice. But if you had asked me for advice, I would just say, float above it, sweetheart. Just get above it. Just get above it. You're not going to change it. You're not going to have an effect on it. Just float above it. Obviously, from what you've written here about your frustration, it's really eating at you. But just, you know, float. Just get above it. Get above it. Get way above it. You say you got a couple of kids. That's the best thing in the world, to divert your energy away from what you have to deal with in the outside world. Focus on your kids. Focus on your kids. And I'll take you at your word that you're just venting, Lisa. You sound really, 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 really frustrated. Just get above it, all right? All right. Just like Caroline, get above it. Back to your phone calls. Martin is calling from Kalamazoo, Michigan. Hey, Martin.
Hello, Mike. How are you?
I'm doing fine. How are you?
Well, considering, you know, the state of the world, I'm doing great.
Oh, good.
You too. I mean, I can hear that. It's quite remarkable, actually, when you consider the negative quality of what you're, you know, contemplating and sharing with us. Yet I can hear you're a good guy. You're not down. You know, you're just you're a good example to people.
Not to
get caught up in it.
Martin, let me clue you in. I'm so down, sometimes I have to look up to see bottom. Trust me. But
I remember that song. I'm from back then too, you know.
But right.
Anyway,
wait a minute. Let me finish. What keeps me you know, from really plunging into some kind of behavior that would probably make me wind up in a prison is, you know, I have a 3-year-old daughter. She'll be 3 in a couple of months. I've got grandchildren. I've got grown children. I have a wife. I have a life. And I just think to myself, you know, I'm not going to throw all this away.
Right.
Just for some spasm of temporary relief that would come through some violent act. So that's what keeps me afloat. And I would hope that's for people who do have children. You know, whether they're their own children or nieces or nephews or whatever. If you're connected to children, grandkids, nieces, nephews, you know, that can be a stabilizing effect. Hold on a second, Martin, while I take a station break here. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio Network.
They didn't see no one in my country. 'Tis of they to take swings at each other on talk show TV. Why don't you just go ahead and turn off the sun? 'Cause we'll never live long enough to undo everything they've done to you. Undo everything.
I was disappointed, frankly, in the vote I got in the African-American community. I put people in my cabinet. I put people in my sub-cabinet.
I put people in my cabinet. Is he talking about Negroes again? Is that what he's talking about? I'm not a racist. When people call me a racist, I just point to my 2 Negroes, Condoleezza Rice and Colin Powell. Plus, I got them in my sub-cabinet. I got lots of Negroes. I collect Negroes. You heard that joke? Save Soviet Jewry. Win valuable prizes. Well, I save American Negroes, and I win all kinds of stuff. Sick bastards. Back to Martin in Kalamazoo. All right, where were we, Martin?
Okay, Mike. Well, interestingly enough, you were just expressing how having family, having that connection with family provides, you know, so much meaning and reason and you know, inspiration to not go down. And just in that regard, of course, talking about connection, the Lakota people, they have a greeting, Homitakuyasin, which means all our relations.
Uh-huh.
You know, and I just want to compare that with you referred to the disgusting spectacle of the Republican talking about God. You know, they're like this bogus show of pious sanctimonious, you know.
Oh,
garbage.
I hate it. Oh, God, I hate it. Yeah.
Well, but here's, you know, this is really a really important thing because, you know, a thoughtful person, we know that when somebody like a Bush talks about democracy or freedom,
uh-huh.
then we immediately know the last thing that's motivating this guy is democracy and freedom.
That's right.
You know, this guy is a selfish, power-mad lunatic who will say anything to advance his greedy, selfish agenda and that of his people. And, you know, all these people, they will use the name of God. You know, they're wolves in sheep's clothing.
Uh-huh.
They will use the name of God. They will use, you know, a veneer of goodness to somehow, you know, hide and justify the absolute worst qualities possible, you know, that a human being can have, which they have, our glorious leaders.
Don't they just fill you with contempt?
Well, yeah, I mean, they are contemptible. They are. I mean, but here's what I find upsetting is that so many, you know, thoughtful people, they look at the way these people are, and then they say, so if these people represent religion, then religion is a bad thing. Now, they wouldn't say, oh, if these people represent democracy, democracy's a bad thing, because they know these people don't represent democracy. These are totalitarian. These are fascists. And,
right.
You know, just playing a game here with us all.
Well, I understand what you're saying, but, Martin, you have to understand, my point of view, I think all religions, every single religion, is a bunch of malarkey and horse hockey. Designed to keep people enslaved and prevent them from thinking clearly. So
here's the one place I beg to differ, and I'm going to make it quick. And
all right, very
not,
quickly, because we're running out of time here, Martin.
Okay, so I'm going to mention some people like Mahatma Gandhi, or like Rumi, the Sufi mystic, Francis of Assisi. These are people, they have no sectarian divisiveness.
Well, now, wait a second. They might have been great people without the trappings of religion. You know, I think you're seeing a cause as an effect instead of an effect as a cause or whatever.
Well, that's not what they would say.
Well, I don't know what they would say. They're all dead, and you don't know what they would say
no,
either.
I study a lot of their...
All right, I understand. Martin, I don't have the inclination to get into a discussion about theology. I really don't, because obviously you have certain beliefs, and I have certain beliefs, or non-beliefs, and they're going to clash through all of eternity. Martin, I have to leave it there. Thank you very much. I appreciate you checking in. I really do. I just, look, you know, don't. Whatever you do, truth seeker, listener, caller, don't call me and talk to me about religion, okay? I don't care how dedicated you are or how faithful you are or how much you put into faith and hope and that stuff, okay? To me, it is total, complete, sorry, here it comes, garbage. So let's spare us both that embarrassment. Believe what you will, as I believe what I won't, and everything will be fine. Let's keep it on a higher plane. Religion to me is gutter nonsense. Let's just keep it on a higher plane. All right? Thank you. Thanks to Ian Huff, also, who engineered the program tonight and answered your calls. Chris in Minnesota is our senior correspondent. Billy Foster, Nova M Radio's CIO, is the moderator at the NovaMRadio.com chat room. Mark Marshall is the webmaster at MikeMalloy.com. Catherine Bay is our executive producer. And if you haven't yet, please go to NovaMRadio.com and sign up for the podcast and the downloads. so you can listen to something unique American talk radio. I think, at least on allocated on the radio, on satellites, yada yada yada, and that is a full blown atheist. Oh my God, so to speak.
Lionel's an atheist.
Really?
Who?
The guy that stole Sam Cedar's slot is an atheist? Oh, well.
A libertarian atheist.
Oh, no, you didn't have to put it that way. Oh, my God, a libertarian atheist. All right, then he's an atheist by fraudulent means. Thanks for participating tonight, Truth Seekers. I appreciate it. If I have offended you, tough. I'll see you tomorrow night, okay? Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is the Nova M Radio Network.